ओम शुक्लाम भरतरम विष्णुम शशिवर्णम चतुर्भुजम प्रसन्नवदनम ध्यायेत् सर्व विघ्नोपशान्तये। ओम सदाशिव समारंभाम शंकराचार्य मध्यमाम अस्मदाचार्य पर्यंताम वंदे गुरु परंपराम। ओम The last Nama of Lord Vishnu that we saw, 834th Nama, Baya Nashanaha. The one Nama before that, 833, was Bayakrit. Bayakrit means Lord gives fear. Lord is the one who gives fear, the giver of fear, Bayakrit. And the next one, 834, is Baya Nashanaha. One who destroys fear, destroyer of all fear. Fear, the root cause of fear, if you go, is nothing but selfishness, ignorance, otherness, or destructive nature. All these have their root in ego. So, a child, in Tamil they say, you know, vilam kandru bayam ariyadu, means very, very small child doesn't know what is fear, because in the child the ego is still not yet manifest. Children are ego less, but in them the ego is unmanifest, it is yet to manifest. Whereas a Mahatma is also ego less. In his case or her case, the Mahatma has gone beyond ego. So in the case of child and in the case of Mahatma, both are egoless. But children, the desire, ego is still not manifest. Potential is there. But in the case of a Mahatma, completely risen above ego. That is why a Mahatma is called as Balabat. He is like a child. She is like a child. A person who's reached the self is compared to a child in that sense. There is no ego. There is no worries of the past, anxieties of the future. There is absolutely no bhaya. Children, they'll go and play with fire. They'll try to catch a snake. There is no fear in them, because the ego is not manifest. The moment I comes, I am different from you. And in the areas where there is selfishness, otherness, ignorance, and destructive nature, there is fear. So, the moment we move away from the self, so in people who has moved away from the self creates the fear. Self creates the fear, and self has no motive to create fear. The fact that they left the self and moved away from the self, there is fear in them. So, whereas in that sense he says, giver of fear. And why does he give that fear? Give that fear so that they get back. That's the idea. So that they get back to dharma. And when they are in dharma, they can get to moksha. That's the idea. See, very, very simple. The concepts are very simple. We are the one who complicate it. Very clearly Vedanta states that everyone is essentially divine. And you are not identifying with your divinity because your divinity is obscured by your desires. So as long as your mind is running helter-skelter, you won't be able to see properly. You won't have the right vision. You won't see the self as the self. You will see the self as the reflected ego. So your mind has to quieten. And mind will quieten when you identify with dharma. Moment you say, listen, I am not going to identify with a big circle. The small circle doesn't align with the big circle. It goes away from dharma. The mind will be agitated, disturbed. And a mind that is disturbed, agitated, cannot see the truth as it is. As simple as that. So, our only primary obligation is to keep ourselves calm and composed. In the world, the moment you get involved, the peace is gone. P-E-A-C-E becomes P-I-E-C-E. That is what it is in the very first shloka of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita says, Dharma Kshetre Kuru Kshetre Samaveta Yutsavaha Mamaka Pandavasyaiva Kima Kuru Vata Sanjaya. Dharma Kshetra has become Kuru Kshetra. The land of peace has become land of war. Kurukshetra is the field of battlefield, isn't it? Where people fight. So, from peace, you are thrown into agitation because you have left dharma. So, holding on to dharma is more for our sake than for the sake of the world or anybody else. For our sake, we should hold on to dharma. So, those who protect dharma will be protected by dharma. So, it's our obligation to protect dharma. But when we try to protect dharma, we should not think we are far superior to dharma and think, I will hold on to dharma. Then that itself will give you agitation because you got attached to dharma itself. Artha, kama, dharma, moksha. Four goals Vedanta talks about. Initially you need artha, wealth. Because first ego is there. So straight away if you go and tell you are not this body, you are not this mind, you get scared and run away. Who is this fellow? He's scaring me. So chalo, you are XYZ. XYZ. Needs to protect yourself. So you need money to buy your clothes, buy your food, buy your shelter. So you're providing education to your children, this, that, whatever. So okay, you need money. Then as an ego, you need enjoyment, entertainment. So chalo, that is another pursuit. Wealth is one pursuit, other is enjoyment and entertainment is another pursuit. But understand that they are not an end in itself. You have to go to dharma. But dharma also is not an end. Then what? But that dharma you hold on to, for what purpose? To go to moksha. Liberation. Because Ashtavakra Gita beautifully says in one shloka, my God, if you understand that shloka, it is like, it will not allow you to sleep. He very simply says, if you think you are free, you are free. If you think you are bound, you are bound. As you think, so shall you become, they say, and that is true, he says. Nobody has bound you. You are free. But because of your delusion and confusion, you are seeing it that way. And if you want to have a proper perception that you are already free, you need to be calm, serene, composed. What we do is, to be calm and composed, we look for a place, we think, going there I'll be peaceful. Being peaceful in a peaceful environment, any fool can be. To achieve peace in the din and roar of market field is something else. And that's what Mahatma Gandhi says, any fool can find shanti in shanti. You need to find shanti in ashanti. You can find shanti in ashanti provided you hold on to dharma. And when we hold on to dharma, two things are very important. We should never assume that I will protect dharma and egoistically get attached to dharma. That is another, that is going to cause you agitation. And second thing is, you should also have principle-centered approach and not principle-bound approach. That dharma is dynamic and not static. So therefore, when you add a little data, then accordingly, dharma will change. So therefore, for example, I must speak the truth. That is dharma. Because if I say lie, I don't know what I told Sadhana, what I told Shweta, what I told Avantika. So if they all meet together, I'm finished. Because 25,000 things I've told different people, different things. So there will be constant insecurity. But if I said the same thing to everyone, my life becomes simple. The way I live, there is no hypocrisy, then it's easy. So, principle is not to lie, speak the truth. But in certain situations, where a girl is coming running, trying to escape from people who are trying to molest her, and goes and hides, somewhere when we are having class, says, please don't tell them when they come to ask for me. They're trying to molest me. You take an vow that you will speak dharma, truth. Are you going to speak the truth? You will speak the truth. Okay? I don't know what girl you are talking about. I have no idea. Please get out. You will say if you think you cannot, you are not stronger than them. If you are stronger than them, you will say, yes, they are here. But you dare not come closer. We will finish you. I have a machine gun with me or something like that. So, dharma is very, very important and essential. But in holding dharma, we need to understand dharma is also a means for moksha. And dharma is dynamic. Therefore, I should not get attached to dharma. And I should not be principle bound. I should be principle centered. And if you hold on to dharma with this proper understanding, then there will be no bhaya, impossible. Bhaya nashanaha. A person who identifies with dharma keeps himself or herself calm. Where is the bhaya? Only when there is ego, selfishness, something I have done for my selfish interests, then there is problem. Then only the fear comes. Otherwise, there is a fear. There was fear in everyone except Prahlada, King Narasimha. There is no fear in that child. Because the child had nothing. No selfishness, no ignorance, no otherness, no destructive nature. None of this. Therefore, the child had absolutely no fear, Prahlada. So, bhaya krit, bhaya nashkanaha. So, if there is insecurity, if there is fear in us, in spite of calling ourselves students of Vedanta, which means we still need to do sadhana and get rid of the ego a little more and little more and little more. Somewhere the attachments are still there. We are only getting informed. We are not really digesting what we are studying. That's why that fear, insecurity, the chahuga, what will happen? The moment you start understanding the higher, there is no fear, nothing. When, you know, Bhagat Singh was given a choice. He said, you will be hanged or you want to apologize, you want to do this. There is nothing doing. Not out of ego. There is no fear in They had identified with the country so much. And they knew what they were asking for is their right, their birthright. They belong to this country. It is their country. So they are not doing anything wrong. There is absolutely no fear, nothing to lose. Other fellows were fear. That's why they wanted to eliminate. You don't want the threat to come and affect you later. You know? So the fear is there. The intellect, which is ego-driven, will be constantly afraid of something or the other. But the intellect, which is identified with the self, has no fear. Because the very basic thing that we need to understand is, ego is false. I can't think of a better example, so I keep giving you this example. Many times maybe I've given. See this, makeup you put on, you means anybody. It will be lasting for a while, isn't it? After that, you're gone. It will be gone. So you got to constantly put that and all that. Always you run. Because it's a fake. Anything fake cannot survive. Anything fake, it cannot survive. Anything truth cannot be destroyed. Nasato vidyate bhavaha, na bhavo vidyate sataha, ubayorapi drishtontaha, svanayos tattva darshitihi. Beautiful shloka, verse number 16, chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita. The Sat never ceases to be. The truth never ceases to be. The untruth never exists. It may appear to be existing. Even when it is appear to be existing, it doesn't really exist actually. Like a rainbow. Rainbow doesn't exist. But it appears to be there. And the truth never ceases to be. Even though it may not be seen by the deluded people. Because truth is not dependent on the authority of deluded people. Truth depends on its own authority. You see it, you don't see it, truth doesn't care. How does it matter? So when you start understanding this philosophy, you live your life. You don't mortgage yourself to anybody else. It's constant. This thing, you know, what will the this fellow think, that fellow think? Because you are holding on to that fake identity, that falsehood. Falsehood cannot survive, it will collapse. So, bhayanashanaha. More and more you get closer and closer to the truth, bhaya is gone. Insecurities are gone. Samsara is gone. When you get far away from the truth, bhaya comes. That's all he says. Bhaya krit, bhaya nashat. Beautiful namas. 833, 834. Now next shloka. Anubruhat kurushat stulaha. Anubruhat kushat stulaha. Gunabrinnir guno mahan. Gunabrinnirguno maham adrita swadrita swasyaha adrita swadrita swasyaha pragvamsho vamsha vartanaha pragvamsho vamsha vartanaha anudbruhat prushat stulaha gunabrit nirguno maham adrita swadrita swasyaha Pragvamsho vamsha vardhanaha. Anuhu. Anuhu means the subtlest. The subtlest of all is the Atma. See, when you talk about divinity, which is both immanent and transcendent, the best word for that is only, which as far as I know, is only in Tamil language. Not in any other language, not even in Sanskrit. In Tamil, the word for God is Kadavul. 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 God, when you say, what you mean is something that is all-pervading. Isn't it? Something that is all-pervading. Everywhere. Eternal, all-pervading, etc. So when you say all-pervading, means it is both immanent and transcendent. It is within this world and it is beyond this world also. It is within this individual and it is beyond the individual also. So the word kada means kadandum irupavar, which means transcendent. Ul means within, imminent. So kada ul, that which is both transcendent and imminent, that is God. Okay, now how do I achieve that Godhead? You repeat the word kadavul. Kadavul, 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 ul kadavul, kadavul, kadavul. It comes ul kada, ul kada, ul. Ul means within, inside. So ul kada, keep crossing the boundaries within. That's what it means. So what are the boundaries? First boundary is body. Cross the body. Then mind. Cross the mind. Then cross the intellect. Then vasanas. Cross the vasanas. Then we'll find the Atma. Ul kada. Ulleye kada. Be inside. You will achieve divinity. So it's a beautiful word for God in Tamil. Kada ul. So something which is transcendent and imminent, you cannot define it as just transcendent. Then what about imminent? If you say imminent, then what about transcendent? So the language of contradiction comes. You cannot avoid. And they are using the language of contradiction because God is something that cannot be conceived by the intellect. It is that which enlivens the intellect. It cannot be conceived by the intellect. God is inconceivable. Aprameya. You cannot measure God with your instrument called the intellect. Not possible. It is not what you conceive, but what makes you conceive. What makes you think, not what you think. So, the language of contradiction has to come. So, in this shloka, he uses the language of contradiction to say that Narayana, that Brahman, who is symbolized by Vishnu, is Anuhu. Anuhu means the subtlest, the all-pervading reality. So, if it is the subtlest, then what about the gross? He says that is also the same thing. Brihat. At the same time, is greater than the greatest. So in dimension, it's the smallest. If you split the atom and go deeper, whatever that you want to call, that is also one. Smaller than the small, bigger than the big. Vamana avatara. When Lord took, that is what he is trying to explain. You are such a small boy, Vamana. But he took that huge form. With one leg he, with one foot he covered the earth. With another foot he covered the heavens. Then he asked, where shall I keep the third feet? So, the Brihat as well as the subtlest is divinity. One who sees God as both Anuhu and Brihat, he cannot see himself separate from God. Because if everything is God, I am inside God, and God is outside me and inside me, like then I will be like a fish. So I'm inside the water. So I'm inside the consciousness. So therefore, when you begin to reflect on these namas, the beauty is it takes you beyond these words and dissolves the ego. See, the idea is that. The idea is not to keep on talking about Anu. Anu ke bare mein, we are having class for five different sessions. Five classes is talking on Anu. And you are going on talking about Anu, but you are not dissolving the ego. That's not the idea. Any of the Nama is to lose yourself. Is not to put a stamp of your name on that Nama. No, that is not the idea. Then you are doing something wrong. Then using Vishnu Sahasra Nama, you want to propagate your Nama. But if you are really studying Vishnu Sahasra Nama in this spirit, then when you understand, it is both Anu and Brihat. The subtlest, the largest. Greatest, the smallest. So, that is Brahman. That is Vishnu. There is nothing that is not Vishnu. So the moment I understand that there is nothing that is not Vishnu, I am dissolved in it. And when the I goes, he remains. He will come only when the I goes. He will not come when the I is there. And who is he? He is Ananda Swarupa. So in the family where there is I, there will not be Ananda. But in the family where there is no I, less I, each one is ready to sacrifice for the other, there will be Ananda. And when there is Ananda, it will be a home. When there is no Ananda, it is just a house. It really doesn't matter how big the house is. Thereafter, the size of the house doesn't matter. What matters is, does God reside in that house? That depends upon whether the ego is residing there or not. If there is ego residing, the God will not be residing. 100%, not possible. And when there is no ego, automatically God resides. So therefore, Anuhu and Brihat, the subtlest, all-pervading. Sri Narayana is the subtlest flame of life in our bosom. The essence from which all life activities spring forth. He is called Anu because he is the center of even the subtlest. This is Swami Chinnanandaji's explanation. And he quotes Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna says, I am seated in the heart of all as the core or essence in all. He beautifully says in the 13th chapter, Sri Krishna, Kshetrajnam chapimam vitti sarva kshetreshu bharata. I am the Kshetrajna in all the Kshetras. These bodies are the Kshetra. Recently I went to Puri and Kashi and all. And all these are places. So, like that, our physical body is also a place where the God resides. So it's a kshetra. In kshetra, I am kshetragya. Sarva kshetreshu bharata. In all the kshetras, I am kshetragya. That's what he says. So, he is the smallest of the smallest and the greatest of the greatest. Meaning what? all pervading. So when you reflect on these two contradictory terms, what happens is you get illumined about the reality. And in that illumination, the dark ignorance that has been striving for a long time dissolves. Suddenly an unbelievable courage comes in you, which has got nothing to do with the bank balance or the support of people or anything outside. And it's not a courage that comes out of stupidity. Suddenly you get the cat, tickling a cat. That comes how? Because you've been reflecting on this. There is nothing that is not God. So then the way you look at things will be different. So what happens is, life will continue the same. Like I said before, nothing different. It's not suddenly going to become like you, like a fairy tale story. Everything will be good. Nothing like that. It'll be same problems everywhere. You start an ashram, then you see. One person was ready to give me land in Edmonton to start an academy there. Luckily we escaped. Luckily we escaped and then big samsa. Another person offered a place very close to Gurugram. Why I'm saying this? It's not that we should not start or anything like that. Nothing against. But that is also samsara. Please understand. Everything there. Everywhere there will be a problem. There will be samsara in everything. So out of fear, it's not that we should run away from it. For different reasons, we didn't do anything there. That's all. But the point I'm trying to say is, the perception changes. The moment you contemplate on this so-called contradictory terms, in that you will get a tremendous you'll get a fascinating depth. In the depth, unbelievable courage comes. Everybody is scared. Kya hoga, kya hoga, kya? Ultimately, that is the point. So you want to feel good by putting few people down. You want to feel good by saying, I am right, they are wrong. Somewhere or the other, what we are doing is the same thing we are doing. All the problem is with all the weak fellows. The strong fellows have no time to think about the other thing. But the weak fellow wants to constantly destroy the so-called strong because he is afraid. The strong fellow has no time to think about the weak. But the weak is afraid that strong will finish it. I'm talking about the real strong people. So, therefore, these are words of contradiction as it were. But beautifully when you contemplate upon it, it awakens you. It destroys the ego. Then he says, Krishaha and Stulaha. It is the leanest and it is the fattest. He'll go into all the contradictory terms. Subtlest, greatest. Leanest, fattest. So, both Krishaha and Stula. So there is nothing that is not divinity. Everything is Vishnu and Vishnu only. It's very delicate. By saying Krishaha, he's saying it's very delicate. Very, very, very thin. Meaning you cannot hold it. And he is the fattest means. You see, the interesting thing is, your mind can go up to a point to conceive that which is fat and that which is thin. But he says, thinnest means what? Again, in that area also it's beyond your mind. And he says, the fattest in that area also, it is beyond the mind. So thinnest and fattest means incomprehensible. And guna brit, one who supports, maintains and expresses through the three gunas. The three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas. He is the supporter. See, gunas are of the maya. Please understand that. I have already explained to you. There is only Brahman. And in Brahman, the potential Shakti called Maya is there. And when Brahman identifies with the potential Shakti, that is called Ishvara. And the Ishvara, when he functions through the Maya expresses the three gunas. Sattva, Rajas, Tamas. So the subtle world and the gross world comes about. Hiranyagarbha, Indrad Purusha comes about. We studied all these things in Sattva Bodha. So, Maya is Trigunatmika. Gunas belong to Maya, doesn't belong to Brahman. So, Brahman is the supporter of the Maya. So, one who supports Guna Brit, but he or she or it is Nirguna. Without Gunas, remaining without gunas, supporting the gunas. That is what it is. Yes, gunabrit and nirguna. One who supports, that's what gunabrit means, maintains and expresses through the three gunas. Through rajas, the creativity happens. All the creations happens through rajas. And through sattva, the maintenance is carried out. The preservation. And through tamas, the destruction, annihilation happens. If you see in this world, all these three are there, no? Creation, maintenance and destruction. You have to create something, you need rajas. Come on, let's go. We'll do it. All these people burn the tremendous rajas. You cannot sit with them. 2 minutes also. Really rajasic fellows I'm talking. Something or other they want to do. But creating force. Tamas is destructive force. It destroys. See, even the happiness, very beautifully he analyzes in the Gita. Tamasic happiness is that happiness that comes through sleep, drugging yourself. Yeah? I'm in Chennai now. This morning also I was coming to my house driving. Everywhere you see one or two fellows minimum. Every day you see one or two minimum. Drunk and lying on the road. Pathetic scene it is. Sad, very sad. And they are oblivious to what is happening. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. Heavy traffic, jam, everything is happening. But they are, I don't know what state they are in. It is that kind of happiness. By deluding you, by destroying you. No, beautifully George Bernard Shaw says, he explains what cigarette is. Give the definition to cigarette. He says, cigarette is a little tobacco rolled in a piece of paper, fire at one end and a fool at the other. This is what we are also doing. Burning our livers and burning our lungs and this and that. And maybe somebody who is in a very cold environment or something, they needed it for some purpose, that's another thing. Nothing wrong in that. But what kind of nonsense is this? Where you destroy yourself temporarily, that nulls your brain maybe, so you forget about everything. But the moment you wake up, it comes back. So what's the big deal? So, this whole thing is gunas. Rajas, tamas and sattva. And this whole rajas, tamas and sattva is supported by Brahman. But Brahman per se is nirguna. Brahman is beyond sattva, rajas and tamas. Brahman is sattva atita, guna atita, nirguna. So with gunas, he is called as, you know, Ishvara, meaning, Ishvara meaning, Brahman identified with Maya. But the gunas doesn't control Ishvara. Ishvara controls gunas. In our case, the gunas control us. That's why what we are supposed to do is, we are supposed to take the help of Ishvara and then control the gunas. Very simple. You hold on to the higher to get rid of the lower. You want to get rid of the lower, you have to identify with the higher. Satsangatve nisangat. Detachment from the lower will come the moment you attach with higher. Satsang means attachment with higher. Nisanga means detachment with the lower. The detachment with the lower can only come when you attach yourself with the higher. Otherwise it will not come. You try whatever you want. So, in the Bhagavad Gita he says, Mama Maya Duratyaya, it is not easy. Very, very powerful. Terrific force it is. A powerful, terrific force called Maya finishes off. Beautifully in the Pineapple and the Bee poem he says, the sight our foolish heart inflames, we long for pineapples and trees. All this he studies, he's like, suddenly you see something. Buy two, get one free. Finished. That's it. You forget about everything. Buy two, get one free, you saw. Automatically your steering wheel turns that side. That's the power of Maya. Ravana only heard the beauty of Mother Sita from Surpanaka. He was finished. So, Maya is very powerful. So, how do you deal with Maya? Take the support of Ishvara. When you are with the Ishvara, Maya will keep quiet. So, without identifying with Ishvara, not possible. That is exactly what's happening in the world also, politics. All the small countries will be aligned with one big country. Either with Russia or with America. And if they leave this and they go that side. If they leave that, they'll come this side. Same thing is happening in Indian politics or any politics if you see. There will be two major parties. The party will leave from this party and go to another party, that party, this party. All this nonsense goes on everywhere. End of the day, what? If you want protection from the bigger force, you need to identify with another bigger force. So one big force is Maya. The other is Brahman. And Maya is subservient to Brahman. Ishvara rather. So you identify with Ishvara. If you identify with Ishvara, you will be protected from the force of Maya. Otherwise it's a problem. It's a very, very big problem. Therefore, if you maintain a certain lifestyle, you know, you understand that morning 4 to 6, sattva manifests. It's conducive for promotion of sattva, development of sattva. 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. it's conducive for rajas, promotion of rajas, increasing rajas. And then 6 p.m. onwards till 4 a.m. conducive for tamas, growth of rajas. Sorry, tamas. So then what do you do? Then you accordingly plan your day. You go to sleep early, wake up early, and before going to bed, you identify with Ishvara in some form or the other, reading stories of Bhagavan or doing puja, whatever, and then go up to sleep and then get in the morning, get up in the morning, study, reflect, identifying with Ishvara, and throughout the day, doing work in the form of offering to the Lord as karma yoga. So throughout you are in touch with Bhagavan. For what purpose? So that you don't come under the force of sattva, rajas, tamas. Slowly, slowly you rise. That's the idea of spiritual lifestyle. Then slowly all these attachments that you've been having over a period of time goes. not just by merely reading one book, Bhagavad Gita, Vishnu Sahasranama, just because you read doesn't mean it will go away. But if you really read it in this, with this understanding, then you follow it up with a certain lifestyle, then it will go for sure. Then it will go for sure. Therefore, guna brit nirguna. Identifying with nirguna. You conquer the gunas. Without gunas, it supports the gunas. Mahan, the great, the glorious, the mighty. Mighty because none of the five elements have the capacity to condition Brahma. See, you are great if nobody's thought can condition you. That is the problem. All of us are like Abhimanyu. We will enter, but we don't know how to come out. You know, sometimes all these people, they have these conclaves. Nowadays it's one another fashion thing going on everywhere. This conclave, that conclave. All these conclaves, you go and sit. And different fellows are talking. Some of them are debating from different ideologies, different backgrounds. Everybody comes and talks. When this fellow talks, you think, my God, this is the correct thing. And the other fellow talks, you from here you jump that side. Very few people have the independent capacity to be independent and independently thinking. Very few. So, that's what he's saying. Mahan means one who is not conditioned by anything. No debates, nothing should condition you. You should always be on the side of the truth. So, Mahan means, Brahman is Mahan because it's not conditioned by any of the elements. Space cannot condition it. Air cannot condition it. Fire cannot condition it. Water cannot condition. Earth cannot condition. You should have the capacity to go into anything and not be polluted by it. But that's not easy. It's easier said than done. A gross example I'll give you. You may be amongst the people who smoke, but you will not smoke. Or even if you smoke, you will not be addicted. Now, if you keep on adding like this, it will all be very good to talk, but it's not easy. Very rarely you find a person who can come out of a gossiping session with zero pollution. Not possible. Something that sticks to you. You do not have the capacity. So the capacity or the affordability rather. The affordability is, that's why I keep saying, spiritual affordability. The spiritual affordability is to be independent of it. If you have the capacity, then you can. Just because you have money doesn't mean you buy one mobile phone. The latest mobile phone I want to buy. Most of us, not even 5%, at least in my case, not even 5% of what that mobile's capacity I use. Maximum what we are doing, WhatsApp, one phone call, few things here and there. But then we don't need such a powerful machine. A powerful machine. We don't understand. That's why they're selling it for that cost. We are buying it for some other reason. So everybody must have it. That sort of a thing. I can afford. I have not borrowed or begged or stolen the money. It's my money. So what's wrong? I can afford it. Teach me at all. I can buy. So I can afford it. That is not the affordability. The real affordability is, can you be independent of it? Can you switch off when you have to switch it off and switch it on only when you need to switch it on? Do you dictate terms to you or the gadget dictate terms to you? So do you have the affordability to, which is spiritual affordability, which is independence? So that's what he's talking about. Mahan, Brahman, nothing conditions. So when we begin to reflect on these namas, then slowly we will also not be conditioned by anything. See, the beauty is you keep on listening to Ramayana. See, now another problem is, which is true, we need to question everything. Even Rama we need to question. Even Krishna we need to question. It is not that we should not question Rama, Krishna, every character. And that's why they've kept it like that. It's good for us to debate, discuss. But in that we should not forget the essence. What they're trying to do is, in the Vishnu Sahasranama, the end, we conclude another 150 namas we have. Whenever God decides, that will happen. Now, and he concludes, he says, so many namas are there, but one nama is enough. Any nama you take is enough. Then he says, Rama is enough. That name Rama can destroy all the fears, everything is there. It's not Rama, it can be Krishna, you take anything. He gives Rama. Sri Rama Rama Rameti Rame Rame Manorame Sahasranama Dattulyam Rama Nama Varanane Rama Nama Varanana Om Nama Iti. It goes like that. So that Rama, when you read, reflect on the Rama's character, many things without your knowledge sticks to you. That's what they show in that movie, na? That Rangade Basanti. These fellows are all enacting the characters of the freedom fighters. Bhagat Singh and all. And they change. So that's why in schools, the children, they have this fancy dress competition, etc. It has a long lasting impression in them. So what kind of impressions we create? So he says, Mahan, absolutely free, goes into anything, supporting everything, but comes out free. That is Mahan, the great, the glorious, the mighty. One who is not conditioned by the five elements, nor by time, nor space. He is the very existence in everything. Without him, the elements cannot exist. Nothing, time cannot exist without the mind, and mind cannot exist without Atma. Therefore, Mahan. Then, Adrita. And Swadrita. Adrita and Swadrita. Adrita means none supports him. Then he supports himself. Who supports him? He is self-supported. See, you don't become dependent on anybody. None supports, because anything other than the self is fake. How can the fake support the truth? And truth is not dependent on any fake logics. Truth survives. Truth will have to come out one day. How much ever color you put on the hair, one day it will come out. Then you quickly run again to brush it up. Truth will surface. You cannot hide it. So it's not dependent on anybody. And definitely, fake cannot support the truth. So none supports it. Adrita. But he is the one who supports. Meaning, because the truth is there, the fake is surviving. Isn't it? Because there is original, what do you call that? Nowadays you have all this fake also. All the t-shirts and everything, you get a fake. And everything is fake. So the fake survives because of the truth. But truth has nothing to do with it. It doesn't break any. Doesn't require any support, doesn't take any support. Then how does it survive? On its own support. So when you reflect on these namas over a period of time, your life also becomes like that. You don't depend on anybody. And anyone who comes in contact with you, they will get solace. They will get joy. You will spread your cheerfulness to them. You will spread your, you will give that comfort to them. But you are not dependent on them. And how do you survive? You survive depending on yourself, not depending on anybody. So adrita, swadrita, self-sufficiency. One of the most important qualities of a spiritual person is self-sufficiency. Self-sufficiency doesn't mean you are hesitant to take others' help. That is madness. That is not what he is saying here. But not to be dependent on anybody. Self-sufficiency. One of the most important qualities. So we don't understand the value of these things. Or this self-sufficiency on all these things. In fact, in certain, like when you go to the West, many things you have to do to yourself. But I really don't know whether everybody learns it that way and comes back. Because I see so many people who come back. The moment they come to India, again their dependence continues. It looks like there is no option, so therefore they did it there. That should not be the case. So which means what? You are actually not self-sufficient. Helpless, so you did it. Real self-sufficient fellow is not somebody who did it because of helplessness. Joyfully you do it yourself. Simple thing like when you eat your food, you cannot wash your plate. Who washes it when you go abroad? Simple thing. Making your bed. Everything. That doesn't mean you don't delegate. You are talking about something else. So when he says swadrita, self-support, self-dependence, so self supports the universe, then who supports the self? Nobody. Self supports itself. See, it's like this, you know. A person who is a thinker, he, through his thinking capacity, supports so many people. They take advice from him or her, and then they, you know, his thinking supports so many people. So who's supporting him? His own thinking only. His own knowledge. The knowledge is self-supporting. It supports everything. This knowledge is that. It supports the person and it supports everyone who depends on that person. And the beauty is, slowly, slowly, whoever is dependent on that person will also over a period of time become independent. That's the beauty of this knowledge. That's the beauty of a guru. Growth possibility. Growth is what? Growth is independence. That is growth. Then swasya. Swasya means one who has an effulgent face. See, your face becomes bright the moment there is nothing that is being hidden. If there is something hiding, then yes. Effulgent face, swasya. There is nothing, you know, you have only knowledge. So there is no insecurity. So where there is going to be some dullness or melancholy. It gives the Veda. See, Swami Chinnamani says, because he gives to the Vedas their beauty and charm. He is the one who is lending the beauty and charm to the Vedas themselves. He is conceived as brilliantly beautiful, enchantingly fascinating, hauntingly charming. These are so many adjectives. What he is trying to say is, he lends that beauty to Vedas and everything, because the base is Bhagwan. The knowledge. Any person with knowledge cannot but be cheerful. There will be something in their face. Because in Tamil they say again, agathil ulladu mugathil theri. What is inside will be shown in the outside. If there is some fear, some problem is there in your body, and you are imagining, could it be this, could it be that, then that will be shown in the face. It will be dull, sad. Nothing, no disease, nothing, you will be cheerful. So, under Kaliya, therefore it's bright and effulgent. Kali means no attachment. There is not, it's not non-possession. It is non-possessiveness. The moment you have attachments and possessiveness, you are finished. You cannot be cheerful, happy, or even if you are, it will be temporary. Very, very temporary. And a person who has nothing to lose, no attachment whatsoever, will always be cheerful. Rama and Krishna, as a lifestyle, their lifestyles were diametrically opposite. But at the inside, they were one and the same. Tomorrow he is going to be coronated. Next day he is going to be coronated. The previous night he was called and told, get out, go to the forest. Happily went. Krishna went from Mathura, did not come back. There is no attachment whatsoever. Lifestyles are different. We go by the lifestyles. We keep questioning the lifestyles. We don't understand their inner spirits. Learning is about the inner spirits, not just about the lifestyle. Okay, you choose the lifestyle that suits you. But inner spirit, both were detached. They did not come back. There was no contract between Sri Krishna and the Pandavas. You are taking my help. After the war is over, 10% mere ko de do. 15%, 12%, 8%. Nothing. Nothing he wanted. We will not talk about all those things. Why is he having 16,000 wives? You are having a problem. That is why you are asking these kind of questions. I'm not saying it as a criticism. We need to understand, we are thinking it is wrong. It is in our thinking. I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying that you need to think about how did we get into this kind of conditions. So swasya, one who has an effulgent face, there is nothing. Free. Should have zero attachment. Then only will be effulgent. Keep moving. Keep on moving. From one experience to another. So, swasya. Then, pragvamsha. One has the most ancient ancestry. The ancient ancestry in the sense is the beginning. Na? Before time. Brahman is even before time. The concept of time is born in the second experience. Isn't it? Now we start at 11 o'clock, then we end at certain time, then you know 1 hour, 10 minutes or 1 hour, 15 minutes has passed by. So the concept of time is born in the second experience. But in the very first experience, still Brahman is there. So beyond everything, the infinite, the most ancient ancestry, whose is it? Brahman's. So therefore, he says Pragvamsha, one who has the most ancient ancestry, the infinite. Cause of the universe and time itself is indicated as the most ancient. Oldest. The beauty of Brahman is it's both oldest and the latest. It is Purana and Nava. It is new as well as old. Again, the language of contradiction to explain the Brahman. Then, Vamsha Vardhanaha, he who multiplies his family of descendants. The same Brahman that is multiplied itself as this universe. Vamsha Vardhanaha. He who multiplies his family of descendants. The Lord's family is the whole universe of things and beings. Vard also means annihilator. There is another meaning. Narayana. The sacred factory in us, to whose feet we turn in all love and undivided attention, in whom the world of perceptions emotions and thoughts merge, as a dream merges into the mind of the victim. Beautiful explanation Swami Chinnamaji gives for this. There, Vamsa Vardhanaha means, one is one who perpetuates one's own family. Meaning, the Lord is one who has become many things and beings of this universe. Whereas Vardhanaha also means destruction. So, when your attention turns towards the Lord, the samsara gets destroyed. When our attention goes on the object, we go on thinking about the object, we create samsara, attachment. But the moment we turn our attention towards the Lord, all attachments of the world dissolves. So he destroys all the attachments. That's all he says. The moment your attention turns towards the feet of the Lord. When we go to the mandir also, then some people have this habit of only looking at the feet. A lot of these people, they look at what jewelry God is wearing, this thing. Not wrong, that's fine. But just the feet. Some people have the habit of worshipping the feet. That's the substrate. Not bother about anything else. Complete charanagati. So, Vamsa Vardhanaha, the destroyer, annihilator of the samsara, perception, action, emotion, thought, all these samsaras are there, attachments. All these attachments he destroys. The moment your attention turns towards the Lord, it's like, you have so many, this thing, foam, froth, bubble, wave, chota wave, bada wave, all that. But the moment your attention turns to water, all these are nothing but water. Chota, bada, sab kuch dissolve ho jaye. More and more you start identifying with the higher thinking. How can you have all this lower, the lower thinking is there, means you still, at that level. All these differences cannot be there. Woman, man, then, Indian, South Indian, North Indian, and then Asian, American, human being, other species. All the differences dissolve. Vamsa Vardhana. The differences has to dissolve as we come into spirituality. If the differences are not dissolving, then there is something seriously wrong. We need to question this spirituality, the so-called spirituality that we are following, whatever it may be. More and more differences are coming, then what is the point in studying the philosophy? Hatred, anger, all these are still continuing. That means what we are doing is we are buying all the medicines and keeping in the medical chest. I'm not taking it in. But taking it in according to the dosage, then obviously the disease will go. The disease are also going on, continuing, but the medicines are also being bought continuously. Then what does it mean? It means there's a distance between you and the medicines. You're maintaining a perfect distance between knowledge and yourself. You need to reflect upon that knowledge. Otherwise nothing will happen. So this is what he says here. Vamsa Vardhanaha. Let's conclude. Om. Om Purnamadha Purnamidham Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyaiva Buddhyatmanava Prakate Swabhavat Karomi Adhyat
सकलं परस्मै नारायणायेति समर्पयामि।